Welcome to this podcast from Shifter. My name is Per Ivar Nikolaisen, and we are here at Christian Rørvik, the sail ship. And we are here with Eric Lechet from Byfounders, the founder of Byfounders. What is actually Byfounders?
The funny thing, as we are here in the middle of the ocean between Oslo and Copenhagen, and I think it describes very much what Byfounders is all about. We are a new fund. And we are investing in the next generation of Nordic and Baltic founders. What really brings us all together is the sea. We are all connected by the sea. When I spoke with Johan Brand about entrepreneurship and what he's doing with that initiative, I immediately dialed in and said, this is exactly a extension of what we want to do. We want to bring it forward to the next generation of founders, and by creating this community at sea, and where we are stuck on this boat for 48 hours, it creates a very different bond than we normally have at a conference. I hate conferences, but what you realize, the reason why you go to a conference is to have the conversations in the lobby. Outside, like in the evening, that's where you meet the interesting people, that's where you have the interesting conversations. That's what we are doing here at sea. And that's what I want to bring forward. So what really we should be proud about in the Nordics is that we are extremely innovative, and we actually are doing it much better than we almost know ourselves. We've seen more and more successful companies coming out of the Nordics. And many of these successful companies have been founded by really, really great founders that now have the experience and the will to bring it forward to the next generation of founders. And really, it's this connecting people and being able to provide a great deal of value, not only money, because there's plenty of capital available these days, both at the early stage and later stage. But what we find is that over and above that, to really foster success, it's essential that we can go in and provide operational insight.
But who are you then?
Byfounders was started a couple of years ago, where we were a group of people getting together. Tommy Andersen, a good friend of mine, and also you could say the co-founder of Byfounders, and I sat down and we really thought about like what are the things that we can do to help the next generation. Tommy Andersen was the co-founder of Libratone. He's been very entrepreneurial throughout his life and also a very active angel investor. And myself, I came from early at Skype, where I was head of mobile. I then joined TradeShift, and later on I started my own company that I sold to HP, and I've been living in San Francisco for the last 8 years. But then around us, we have the backing and of some of the most accomplished founders from the Nordics, including Johan Brand in Norway, to mention one, Niklas Sandström in Sweden, and the founders of Unity, Zendesk, TradeShift, Trustpilot, Vivino, and many, many other great companies. And what's interesting about what we've set up is really we've asked everyone to contribute to the fund. So they have all invested in the fund, which creates a very different type of engagement. And the key is that we can bring it forward to the next generation of founders. As I mentioned, we just don't want to come with capital. We want to be able to provide insight and help them forward. What we did, like a startup, we did an MVP in Denmark. That was to get it off the ground. We raised the initial money from Danish investors, and the initial team of the Founders Collective were Danish. That was to prove, can we actually build, you know, a startup VC? Secondly, we are now expanding that very rapidly in the Nordics, and you will see over the next couple of months that you will see there will be many more very interesting and very experienced founders joining the Founders Collective.
In Norway too.
In Norway too, for sure. It's interesting, you know, we've spoken with a number of VCs about how they see the Norwegian market specifically. And we've been a little bit puzzled because what we find is that it's really fast growing and high quality of founders. Still, the presence of VCs here is fairly limited. There's a very strong angel setup, And we are very happy to be working with the likes of Trond Reber and others that are helping us again navigate the pre-seed space. But in the seed and Series A level, we don't see that many VCs involved, and which is where we actually want to make a strong position ourselves. And truth be told, we are looking to even recruit and have a permanent person working here in Norway for us.
But is it something wrong with existing funds and venture capitalists? Why do we need you?
Yeah, no, I think you can say we are just doing it different. We believe that with a strong outset in operational experience, we have the possibility to look at the next generation of founders with a strong pattern recognition. When we see, you know, great founders from Estonia or from Finland or from Reykjavik in Iceland and talk about what they are planning to do and what they would like to achieve, we can like relate to that and look at, oh, I saw the same type of pattern when Skype was getting off the ground or when TradeShift was getting off the ground or when any of the other companies that we our founders have been involved in got off the ground. And we believe that is a really a core, a key source to be able to foster the next generation of successful founders. I think, again, we should recognize that at the time when we invest, there's not much more than an idea. There might be some early data points. But other apart from that, there's very little that you can say, okay, this is a proven, you know, 5 years of numbers that we can just say, okay, that makes sense. We really are focusing on early stage, hence we need to have some other metrics that we're looking at. So for us, what at ByFounders, what we define based on looking at what made Skype and TradeShift and Unity and Zendesk successful was a number of key ingredients. We try to keep it simple. So we call it the 7 T's. For anyone that's listening to that, I hope they will use that as well as inspiration when they are looking to do a startup or if they're already doing a startup. Try to use that as a measurement for seeing where they're headed and whether that is actually a venture case and something that ByFounders or any other VC would be interested in investing in. But the key for us is the team. At the end of the day, we invest in founders. You can very, very quickly fall in love with great ideas, but those who execute, those who make it happen, are the founders. And if we are not sure about the capabilities of founders, there's a high risk. Imagine, like, or remember, like a startup, it can take 5-10 years easily. This is a marriage. And you don't just like, hey, let's go on a date and let's then get married. No, you spent time in really understanding, is this partner of yours going to be the right one? Does he or she has the right capabilities to bring this forward?
But how do you see a good team? What is it about? Is it a skill set in programming, coding? Is it the persons?
So, for example, from time to time, we have single founders coming. And already that is a red flag. You know, it's a long journey, right? And being alone out there is just very difficult. And also might be a sign that the person is not very good at working with others. Can we see that there are 2 or 3 coming together? That's a strength. Secondly, we can then look at the dynamics in the group, how they interact, who's taking the lead, who's contributing, and are they also able to complement each other very well. So do we have a strong, you know, technical CTO hacker? Do we have a strong commercial CEO maybe that's a hustler? And do we have a strong product designer that can really bring this whole thing to life? So those are the things we're looking at. And then, of course, key is as well, do they have the background to do this? Have they studied at a university, they've studied AI and now they're going in and changing world using AI? That makes a ton of sense. Have they come from a real estate background and suddenly now they're doing a startup to disrupt the whole real estate space?
When it comes to persons, for example, the Beatles, they made great music, but they fight a lot.
That's right.
Can you see that in a group when you meet a startup? if this is a Beatles, is it going or is it going to be a smooth thing, or are there conflicts here that are going to rip the band apart?
Yeah, no, there's for sure. Like, what we are trying to do is actually spend a lot of time with the team, and not just in the sales situation, you can say, where they are trying to pitch to us, right? I would like to come back to that point as well around like the unvalue of pitching, but more than like going for walks with them and finding out like, you know, what they've done in the past and what makes like what's their definition of success, and seeing that the three founders, for example, are they aligned, are there things that suddenly we can experience that they don't have the same aspiration, or one is bullying the two others. That's obviously things that we believe we can like sift through, but sometimes we get surprised. But that's why it takes time, and which is why we don't just say yes on the first date.
Can you give me some examples on situations where you have been surprised?
I would say there's a ton of examples where, you know, we hear great ideas being pitched, but we definitely just don't find that the team is the right team. And what we are trying to do as well is then, it's never no, but we are saying, hey, you might want to really make sure that you are better covered on the commercial side, or you're better covered on this, so you stand stronger. And then seeing how they execute. It also can be that we have the first meetings and then we say, you know what, it'll be great if we can meet in 6 months' time. Here are the things that we'll be looking at. And then seeing how they have executed over that period of time.
But if one is bullying the other, it's kind of difficult to go on, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then we'll, of course, say that this is not a fit for us. But I think so. Team is number one. Mm. Two is total addressable market. Is really, is this a billion-dollar business? You know, many people have great ideas, but the problem they're solving is not big enough. Not big enough for us to believe that it can become a global company, right? It's not saying that it's not a good idea, and we encourage people to just go on, but don't take it as a loss if we say no, but it's just simply that the total addressable market is too small. The third one is technology. We would like to see that there's some type of rocket science. We'd like to see there's something that's defensible and really can keep them, you know, at an edge compared to competitive entry. The fourth one is transformative. Can we see that this is changing an industry? Very often people come and pitch a feature, something that you say, this is a natural extension to something that a Salesforce would build, or a HubSpot would build, or a Facebook would build. But we really like when people are coming and saying, we are changing the whole way how we previously have done this. Now we can do it much more efficient, because we see that the real game changers, like Spotify, like Skype, like Unity, like TradeShift, they've gone in and transformed an existing industry, disrupted what was there. Then apart from that, we also are looking at trend and timing, because again, you know, you can very quickly, often many of the founders we meet with are super visionary. They are so visionary that the market, they are 5 years ahead of the market, and they will take 5 years to convince consumers to change their habit and build into this. And then it's just a long, long uphill battle. And of course, others are like completely off because they were like figuring out something that already is red hot right now. And then they are just a follower to this. So timing and trend is also essential. Then the next one is traction. Like, do they have some numbers they can show? And what's key here is, we always say, forget about the vanity numbers. We don't care whether they have 500,000 downloads or, you know, a million, whatever. What we are looking at is monthly active users, daily active users. We're looking at the churn. We're looking at conversion rates throughout the funnel. So we can actually see much more the pulse of the company and seeing, is there a good product market fit? Do their users love what they're doing? Or are they keep on just pushing people into a bucket that's filled with holes? And then the last thing for us, and the important piece, because we are an investment fund, is of course, can we make a 10x return? So when we set a valuation, do we believe that they can be at least 10x that value when they exit at some point of time?
What's the range in the investments?
So we are focused on Seed investment is our primary focus, but we do also from time to time do pre-seed investment, which we do alongside with angel investors. And we do also do Series A investments, which we also often do alongside larger VCs that we are collaborating with, either from the Nordics, from Europe, or from Silicon Valley, where I'm based.
You have told me that you you actually hate pitches.
Yes, that's right. I think, you know, it's you know, I'm of course used to YC and 500 startup and demo days and so on, where you need to do a pitch in two minutes and whatnot, and that's the recipe for that. But in general, what we are saying to anyone that comes and present to us what they're all about. Like, of course, as I mentioned, it's key that we understand who they are and they spend time on that. But secondly, also that when they present, they do also show us what I call the ugly slide. What is the ugly slide? It's like, why should I have something that's ugly? We actually would like them to tell us what are the key challenges they have. What are the things that they believe can go wrong? What are the things that keeps them up at night? Because it identifies like areas where we can come in and help them. And secondly, and I think that's also important for us, if they don't tell us this and show that they have an understanding of the space they are in and the problem they're solving and also the issues that might be with that, if they don't tell us that, I'll assume two things. One is they are either hiding something or they are lying, or that they are simply ignorant and don't know the issues. And both either being lying or ignorant is not a good recipe for a founder. They need to also acknowledge some of the challenges and thereby address them. So that's why we always are saying, you know, come with the ugly slide and we can talk about that. And we will much rather invest in a founder that come with an ugly slide and show us and open up what it is that they are challenged with as well, than somebody that comes super cocky and just say, yeah, this is what is going on and I'm super happy. And then the day we invest and we sit on that board and we suddenly realize, oh my God, this person had no clue. Then it's going to be a really rough ride, because then you lost trust. And when you don't have trust to a founder, it's an uphill battle.
Do they have to have a clear business plan? How to earn the money in the end?
No, that's a good question. So basically, the way we describe it is at pre-seed, they're coming with, you know, an idea. They formed a team. They're building maybe a simple prototype, so to test out the basic assumptions. But apart from that, they don't have much more than that. There's a huge level of risk, and hence the checks are also much smaller. At seed stage, they do come with a well-working prototype. They can show some of the initial numbers. And the key there at seed stage is to prove product market fit. At seed stage, where we are looking to invest between $750 or $1 million or even $2 million together with others, it's essential that we can see that they've found a market and that the users like that. With the money we are then they're raising, they can use that to really put much more firepower through that and become a commercial company. At that time, they actually don't need to make money. It's like they can talk about how they are planning to make money, but it's not a requirement. At Series A, that's where we want to show, like, this is not longer a test. They have like kicked out all the kinks in their product and so on. Now it's all about like really rapid growth, and where we are also investing a much higher scale. So total rounds are often between $5 to $10 million that we invest in that size at Series A.
But you do this because you missed something when you were a founder. Hmm. What did you miss, actually?
Yeah, no, I think I think the core here is that when we meet with founders, they should recognize, and we emphasize, that we were in the same shoes as they were. And we spent a great deal of time in making sure that they get the proper feedback and they actually can, even though we say no, they should be very clear why we said no, so they can learn from that and hopefully even come back later on with having addressed some of the issues that we were concerned about. And what we believe is that we want to step it up a notch, where we, with the experience we have from this founders collective of experienced founders, that we can provide a value add where the new next generation don't make all the mistakes that we made. And I think that's key for the success going forward.
But you seem like a successful guy, and you're talking about mistakes. So can you mention some of those mistakes and some of the hardship you had in your ventures?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think being an entrepreneur in general is you're taking a ton of risk all the time, and your every day is filled with decisions. And you know every time you make a decision, there's a 50% chance that this is what's the wrong decision. And for sure, throughout everything I've done, I can see I've taken risk. I have made mistakes. Many of them, of the mistakes, have turned into failures, but I've learned from it. And that's key on doing that. Like, as an example, when I started a company called MemoLane, which was a next generation of social media, we were all focused on web. And when we had, at one point of time, the conversation within our team, should we go mobile?
Which year was this?
We are back in 2010.
Okay.
Like, yeah. The iPhone was launched in 2008. People are still very much centered around web, but there is a shift happening, right? There's a huge trend of everybody going mobile. And I have a conversation with my co-founder around going mobile. I came from mobile with Skype and so on, but again, I don't write code. So my co-founder and I, we discussed that, and eventually we came to the conclusion we stick to web.
And that was his decision. Was it a conflict there?
It was his argument why we should stay with web, I thought was valid. I also was pushing for web, for mobile for sure, but also given the competences we had our team, we felt there were some things we wanted to prove, and it was faster to prove it on web. So I wouldn't say it was his mistake or my mistake. I was just like, we made a decision, we went on web, and that was a big mistake, right? Because we could see that other players like Path at that time went straight on mobile and had a better traction than we had. So in hindsight, we should have done that.
What happened then?
So what happened was that a year after we launched, on the 17th of September 2012, my phone just goes crazy. It's like on text messages, on Messenger, on everything. Eric, have you seen this? Mark Zuckerberg up on stage talking about Facebook timeline. And Facebook timeline was basically a 100% ripoff of what we were doing at MemoLane.
Whoops.
So when you see, for example, if you're on Facebook, that it reminds you, here's what you did 5 years ago. That's exactly the type of service that we were offering. At that time, it didn't exist. With Facebook coming along, it changed the game. We had 80% of our users came from Facebook, and we could see a drastic drop in our user acquisition following that. And then it's like, what do you then do, right?
Yeah.
And being in Silicon Valley, that's a good thing, right? Because then there's many other companies that are looking at Facebook and say, hey, we want to compete with them. And that opened up a number of conversations with the likes of Google, with Twitter, and so on. We eventually sold to HP.
You sold it, but what happened afterwards?
So I stayed along at HP.
But with the company. Yeah, you stayed.
Yeah, with the company, and where we're integrating that with HP services and what they wanted to use it for. And after a year, I left. And I think that's a path that many founders, they go through.
You're not the guy that stays at the corporate.
I think there's definitely, once you've become a founder, it's difficult to be in a big corporate environment where there's a lot of politics. And of course, when I think the biggest challenge we had as a team was before Memolane was one and all, right? Priority number one, this is what we're doing. And suddenly we found that everything we wanted to push through would be, you know, prioritized different compared to what else was in happening in that organization. And hence it's like, okay, if it's not a priority, why should we then keep on pushing for it?
And is it difficult for a founder to suddenly have a boss?
No, I don't think so. It shouldn't be as long time we aligned. At some time it might change, and then you should just realize that and not, you know, picking a fight that has no bearing, right?
What has been your most difficult moment during your founder career?
I think one thing that I think we should recognize again, it's like what describes a good founder in general. As I mentioned before, founders are not afraid of taking risk. They're not afraid of getting a beating. Often you will see the founders have, when you look at their personality, a very even keel. What do I mean by that? When you have a success, you're like, yeah, that's great. But you don't celebrate for a week. And then, you know what? Because you constantly are thinking, what's next out there? But at the same time, when you get a strong punch in your stomach, you don't like start crying and, you know, weep and bury yourself. No, you say, that's it. You just brush it off. So what I often, when I meet with founders, I tell them, try to remember to celebrate your successes and remember to stop and enjoy it, because we often are too fast to go through. To your question about like what has been my toughest moment, I think obviously when you invest so much time and effort and you make so many sacrifices around an idea that you have, and then realizing that it didn't materialize to the vision you have, you need to, you know, be able to stay strong and say, okay, that was it, onwards, upwards, and not like, you know, dig yourself down in a hole.
And that's difficult in Scandinavia, isn't it?
Yeah, no, there's definitely some culture in Denmark that, and in the Nordics in general, in Scandinavia, that we as a society, we hate failure. Everybody is perceived, you know, as a loser if they have a failure. And it's very much, you know, it's interesting. In the Nordic vocabulary, we have a word that everybody knows what it is, skadefuld, right? Schadenfroh in German. We know exactly what it means. And so many people are powered by that. It's really awful, right? But all the gossip magazines and newspaper, they are filled with skadefuld articles. It's all about that, right? And of course, Jantelov is on top of that. But really what drives me and what is one of the key things of why I have started by founders is I've realized what makes me happy is helping others to succeed. And we don't have a word for that. It's the opposite of skadefuld. It's glædesfuld. It's like being happy, seeing others succeed, right? In Buddhism, it's called mudita, right? And for me, this is really a core message that I would like to bring forward to us here in the Nordics, that we should think about how can we help anyone out there to be successful, because we will realize that we actually ourselves become happy by helping others.
When you have made your failures, hasn't it been difficult to explain for friends outside the core about the failure? Do you like cover it up in a way?
I think this is a good question. Exactly, you should embrace it. You should just go straight out and say, yeah, it didn't work out as we wanted, and we onwards, upwards. That's it, and not like saying I can't talk about it and so on. It's much better to just take it out in the open. In general, what I experience is anything where you know there's a challenge, like face it and bring it out in the open, because obviously it often ends up being a positive because you have many others that can relate to it, come out and say, hey, I was in the same situation.
When it comes to the investors and buy founders, I guess, have you had any like bad experiences with former investors that actually brought you to where you are at the moment?
I think both. What we're seeing is that some of the most successful investors are previous founders. If we look at Lifeline in Finland, if we look at Reid Hoffman with Greylock, if Mark Andreessen with Andreessen Horowitz, it's like some of the most successful VCs come with a founder background. So that is one thing. Secondly, I also feel that it's much more solid when we as founders can meet with other founders and provide them feedback versus somebody that's never tried to do a startup and is sitting there and talking about like, hey, this will not work because of this and that, right? I think we can talk with a much stronger base of knowledge and hence provide much more value. And again, this is why we spend a lot of time and you will actually see much more coming out of what we are doing with ByFounders. And the reason why we are here on the ship in the middle of the ocean is really to be able to connect people at a different level and be able to leverage that network to help the next generation of founders by being able to, hey, you have this problem. I know exactly this person that can help you. And thereby making sure that they make fewer mistakes, have fewer failures, and that they can build their successes to a much higher degree.
If I'm a founder and I got the investments from you, may I then sit down with Niklas Zennström and you and get the personal advices on how I do things or how is it?
Yeah.
What are your concrete
doing? Yeah, no, exactly. So what we do is basically across the board, if take a company like PeerGrade, which is a very innovative education platform and is really transforming the way that students and schools are using a platform to grade and get much better feedback. So when David, the founder, came to us, the first thing we did in our Founders Collective, we have a really experienced guy called Peter Hasbeck that does iMotions. He's based in Boston, and they are 20% or more, actually 80% of their sales is to universities and so on. So he knows that space so well. So we put them in contact. One is, of course, Peter could give us some insight whether he felt the PeerGrade was a good investment and where they were heading. But the second one was really to try to help David as well to have a wingman. And as we invested, then also we brought Peter to really sit alongside David, and now PeerGrade is moving to Boston.
How do you actually find the different companies? That's also interesting.
The strength of our Founders Collective. The number one thing we ask for all our founders that have invested in the fund is to bring forward great founders that they meet with. And this is the thing, you know, when Johan Brand and any other else meet with a great founder and say, hey, I wish I could do something for them, they can. By just forwarding them to us, we can really like take them on a journey and help them scale internationally.
Have you invested in any Norwegian companies so far?
Yes, we have. We are super excited to have invested in Hans, Sarah, and Sondra that started Safety Wing, which is a insurance platform for the gig economy. And the way it worked was exactly a great example of how you know we operate. To our good friends at ByFounders, Neil Murray, who runs at the Nordic Web, he reached out and said, hey, we should take a look at Safety Wing. And at the same time, CERN, who's part of Curasense, which is another portfolio companies, they live together, Sondra and CERN in San Francisco, also recommended we talk with Safety Wing. And then I started reaching out and we had a very good conversation, very impressed about that team and how they operate.
In what way?
So the fact is that they worked together before, which is a strong signal, right? That they have a track record together. Secondly, they complement each other very well. Sarah very technical. Hans is a lawyer, and Sondre is a great product builder.
But you say that you are trying to build a bridge between Silicon Valley and the Nordics and the Baltics.
Yeah.
Why do we need that?
It's like a little bit like the Israeli model. Like in general, our geography here is too small in itself. So to succeed, you actually need to come out to a larger market. And proof shows that if you're able to bring it to the US, then you have a much higher likelihood of becoming a global success. We see that French and German and even British startups often, you know, are self-sufficient in their own country and never make it across border. While like Danish, Swedish, Finnish, Norwegian and Estonian founders have really become successful because they very quickly made the move to the US, like Pipedrive, like Spotify, like Skype and Unity and Zendesk and so on.
Every investor will say that he or she has a network in Silicon Valley, but do you really have it?
Yeah, I've lived there for 8 years, and we've invested tremendous in that geography. Crandom is doing the same, and we are seeing a number of other European funds have that strong tie, and it really helps. I'm not saying that we are sourcing deals, but the fact is we made 9 investments. Of the 9 investments, 4 of them are already in the US, 3 of them in San Francisco, 2 of them have been through YC, Y Combinator. So there's like, it's no longer a never happening. It's more often the rule that they are here in the US, and we hope and we believe that we can prove a lot of value by extending that network when they're coming over, that we can be that bridge, helping them to build up momentum in the US, and once ready, then raise an even bigger round for some of our partner VCs.
That's going to be exciting. I just want you guys, folks out there, to hear on my little disclaimer, because Johan Brand, he invested in Shifter, so that's important to have in this podcast, and he is a part of Byfounders, as you heard. I think we have to end here because we are actually sitting in a workshop where they have all the tools at Christian Radek, and the captain was just here to tell us to leave.
We got kicked out.
Yeah, we got kicked off. Thank you, Eric, for joining us, and hope to see you on board again.
Thank you.